From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon. This is Eben Fowler in for Tony Perkins today on this edition of Washington Watch. Glad you're listening on this Monday. We got a very interesting program today. I think you're going to want to hang in here for the whole thing. Up first, Scott Jennings, CNN contributor and former assistant to President George W. Bush, called out Barack Obama in an op-ed on Friday, saying that the recently posted Mueller report makes the former president look, quote, just plain bad. Republican Congressman Ralph Norman of South Carolina will join me to talk about that. In the second segment, Federalist senior contributor Ben Weingarten will explain why Democrats freaked out when Attorney General William Barr said that the Trump campaign was spied on. And at the bottom of the hour, Jeff King, president of International Christian Concern, joins us to discuss the tragic terrorist bombings of Christians during Easter Sunday services, which killed 207 so far Sri Lankans and injured another 450 in churches and hotels. In the last segment, which is going to be really interesting, I think, especially if you're either a millennial or a parent or a grandparent of a millennial named Alyssa Algren, who writes for Alpha News, joins me to challenge her generation for embracing socialist policies while enjoying the fruits of capitalism. Well, Scott Jennings, CNN contributor and former assistant to President George W. Bush, called out Barack Obama in an op-ed on Friday, saying that the recently released Mueller report makes the former president look just plain bad. The partisan warfare over the Mueller report will rage probably for as long as President Trump is in office, and then who knows how long after that. But one thing can't be denied. Former President Barack Obama, according to this article, looks just plain bad. Well, and according to the Mueller report, if you read it, on his watch, the Russians meddled in our democracy while his administration did very little about it. Here to talk about that is Republican Congressman Ralph Norman, who represents the 5th District of South Carolina and serves on the Oversight and Reform Committee as well as the Science, Space, and Technology Committee. Congressman Norman, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you so much. My pleasure.
I'm glad to have you on today. Well, the Mueller report, I'm sure that you're hearing, you can't get away from it. We can't get away from it out here in flyover country. But it states that Russia began interfering in American democracy in 2014. The Obama administration knew this was going on, but they didn't do anything. Specifically in 2016, Obama's national security advisor, Susan Rice, told her staff to stand down and knock it off as they drew up plans to, quote, strike back against the Russians for their interference. And again, this is back in 2014 when this all started. Congressman Norman, the big question is, why do you think Obama went soft on Russia? What's your take on that?
Well, you know, if it were one thing, Eben, it would be, you know, if you could cite one thing, if this was the only thing. But look what he did with Al-Qaeda. Look what he did with the $1 billion at the middle of the night cash he paid to the Iran regime. And he was inept, but it's almost like he had something against this country. You know, thank God for Donald Trump. The narrative should be all along, why was nothing done, as you stated, in 2014, which is when this began? Why was something not done? And that's a $64 question. I don't know. All I know is that the press has always given Barack Obama a pass. They would not report anything, just like they're taking this Mueller report, which was bad news by all accounts. It was good news for America, but for Democrats, it was bad news. And the old adage, if you don't get the message you want, you kill the messenger. That's exactly what they're doing, attempting to do with Mr. Barr and others. And it's really, it's a tragedy.
Well, according to this article, again, that I talked about here at the beginning of this segment, the writer's assessment is that, you know, Obama was trying to work through the Iran deal, and Russia, it was important that Russia be on board with that. And what he's saying is that potentially Obama kind of backed off because he, you know, backed off on Russia, that is, and sanctioning them further and giving them effective sanctions because she didn't want to upset Putin. Do you think that might be part of it?
Well, and you remember his famous quote when the microphone picked up his statement, "I can do more after the election." The press never really followed up on that. And you know, nothing surprises me about what he did or didn't do, and it's now coming to light. But I don't think we know a fraction of what that man did against this country for the security and for the national interest that we have. And again, thank God for Donald Trump that he's finally, we've got an adult in the White House who loves America.
Well, you know, here's the, something that in that article that was quite surprising to me. It was stated that even Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff, who has relentlessly continued to pursue the Russia collusion narrative, that he had said back then that, the quote, the Obama administration should have done a lot more. Does that surprise you?
Well, coming from him, it does. But with him, it's just all words anyway. I mean, it's just like the constant barrage we've had for the census investigation has been going on. He had the evidence that's going to impeach us, allow this president to be impeached. Well, where is it? It's not in a 450-page document. And, you know, he's couching it somewhat, but still he's taking the position that they're going to parse every word of that 450-page document. And, you know, the sad part about it, Evan, is, you know, two years and two months, $35 million, 500 witnesses, 22 lawyers, 12 of which, from my understanding, were Democrats or leaning liberals that would have loved to pin something on Donald Trump. They didn't do it. However they want to say it, they didn't do it. And now they're trying to I think, mainly cast this president in a bad light. But I think the reverse is going to be true. I think it's going to end up, it's going to help him because he's a fighter and he didn't do anything wrong. And he was totally vindicated on collusion and obstruction of justice, because you can't have obstruction of justice unless you had collusion. And that was proven that he did not collude with anybody.
Well, the other thing, too, is if indeed the entire Mueller investigation into Russian collusion was based on a false premise, based on fake information, if you will, then it's hard to obstruct an illegitimate investigation. What do you think about that?
Well, and that should have been back when the dossier, when we read it, went to the skiff and read it. And by the way, the Democrats at the time did not want to make it public. And very few of them, if any, read it. It was fake information, and this was all, you know, was paid for by the Hillary Clinton campaign. And, you know, the FBI sets the gold standard, or should, and they should have investigated this, but nobody thought that President Trump was going to win, and this was just covering their tracks. And now, why are they not calling for an investigation of why innocent Americans were spied on? FISA warrants are not something you get every day by an ease of the mechanics to get it. And they're not calling for any witnesses. You know, who do they call? Robert Barr. And they better be careful what they get from him, because he can take care of himself. And I think, as you've seen, they will not get him on anything with the report, because he's just reporting on what others have written, what Mueller came up with. So I think at the end of the day, I don't see the Democrats giving up on this. What else have they got to run on? I mean, we've done nothing for 100 days. We really haven't. And I'd like somebody to explain to me, if they keep on with impeachment, tell me where the two-thirds vote in the Senate's going to come from. They may or may not get the House, but tell me where the votes are going to come up to carry it through, which just shows me it's grandstanding and they're trying to, with the help of the media, paint this president in a bad light.
Well, and that may explain to some extent why people like Nancy Pelosi are sort of dissuading others from, or attempting to dissuade others from going down the impeachment road. She can look toward out at the future like just about anybody else and say what you just said, which is, you know, the Republicans have the Senate. They're just not going to vote to convict. It was, you know, kind of like back in the Bill Clinton days. And of course, there was a lot there to impeach that was impeachable. The House did, the Senate didn't. So that's where that went. Well, all that we have is the news media to sort of assess what's going on there in Washington with all this talk of impeachment and that sort of thing. You're there. Give us a little bit more of a temperature reading as you walk around the Capitol and interact with your colleagues. What's it really like? And is there any possibility that the Democrats are going to give up on this foolishness?
Well, I think if they calculate that it will ultimately hurt the president, they'll do it. In other words, they will not give this president a win for anything. That's just how they are. Now, I do think it's a meltdown of their party because AOC is taking sucks all the oxygen out of the room. And she, the good news is they're keeping her in complete disarray. I mean, how does Pelosi navigate somebody that extreme to leave Omar? And then you got Cindy Hoyer, who's more of a centrist, but it's like nailing jello to a wall. How do you do it? I don't know how she's going to keep them, halfway in line. But they don't like when you talk. Well, at least my experience, when you talk to Democrats, the mainstream, they can't with most of them, AOC particularly, they don't like her because she gets all the publicity, and they. Even though she represents the far extreme, that's who they're reporting on. And so it's a meltdown of the party, and it would be interesting to see how her conference call went today, because I don't know how she's going to navigate, which you can't, in dealing with them, I still have oversight with her, AOC, you can't deal with her. I mean, she's just so far extreme. Her views are not mainstream America. And she's a socialist. She's unabashedly wants government to control Medicare, all of our health care, Social Security, you name it. And so that's the dilemma Pelosi finds herself in.
Well, what's frightening about Alex Cortez, AOC, whatever you want to call her, is that she knows so little, but she's given so much attention. And people are actually paying attention to her in a world where there were more adults in Congress, present company excepted, of course. But her views and her attitude and the way she conducts herself would be dismissed out of hand. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. If it were another day and time, I mean, the Democrats in the, 60s and 70s even weren't as extreme as this lady. But she hasn't had the life experiences, Evan. I mean, she's nothing wrong with a bartender, but, she hadn't started a business or really contributed, to paying taxes and doing what hardworking Americans do daily.
Well, maybe she'll grow up here after a while. We can only hope. Congressman Ralph Norman of South Carolina, thanks so much. We appreciate your time today and giving us some insight into what's going on up there. You're listening to Washington Watch. Evan Fowler with Bot Radio Network filling in for Tony Perkins. Coming up next, Federalist senior contributor Ben Weingarten will explain why Democrats freaked out when Attorney General William Barr said that the Trump campaign was spied on. You won't want to miss that or anything else in this program today. It's going to be very, very interesting. We'll see you after the break.
When you look at what is going on in our country and culture today, do you often ask, what can I do? Well, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on October 11th through 13th in Washington, D.C., and join thousands of Americans just like you who want to change the culture in a way that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Mike Pompeo, Kirk Cameron, Dana Loesch, and Ben Carson. In addition, there will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview, and informational sessions focused on the topics of life, religious liberty, the LGBT movement, national security, the realities of socialism, and more. On October 11th through 13th, stand with thousands of Values voters to restore our great nation. Registration is now open. Don't miss the early bird price of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Happy birthday to you.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy birthday, dear.
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Evan Fowler in for Tony Perkins today. Glad to have you along. Great show coming up here. I think you'll agree. Welcome back. Again, there are two reasons the political media establishment is growing increasingly hostile towards Attorney General William Barr. Well, first, of course, he serves under President Donald Trump. Second, he is not only the messenger of the demise of the Russiagate conspiracy theory, that the deep state and its aiders, abettors, and enablers in the political media establishment worked so hard to perpetuate, but he could also be the source of the demise of the establishment itself if he ends up exposing their whole sordid affair. That's the contention of my next guest, Ben Weingarten, a Federalist senior contributor. Ben, welcome to Washington Watch.
Evan, thanks so much for having me.
All right. Well, give us I'm just going to let you take it from here and give us a kind of a synopsis of the article that you wrote about this topic.
Yeah. What really spurred my interest in sort of following the, as I term it, the political media establishment freakout over Attorney General William Barr was the fact that I noticed the coordinated messaging among what I call the Democrats' communications arm in the mainstream media, as well as senior ranking Democratic members of Congress, who all said the same kind of party line when it came out that Attorney General Barr, in testimony in Congress, contended that there was spying on the Trump campaign. And this caused guffaws and terrified faces by all of these Democrats in Congress, as well as folks in the media. And their response was to basically attack Attorney General Barr as a Trump administration stooge. And it's funny, of course, because they call him Trump's attorney general as if every attorney general isn't chosen by the executive. And also leaving aside, of course, that Attorney General Eric Holder was described as Barack Obama's wingman. But leave aside the fact that Attorney General Barr has not shown himself to be a stooge, but rather actually someone who plays things by the book. There's been a constant pattern of attacking Barr. First, he wrote that memo regarding the concept of a president not really being able to obstruct himself months before he was ever appointed to be Attorney General. Then, when he actually delivered the summary of the Mueller report's findings in advance of the Mueller report, he got attacked. Then he got attacked for having put redactions in the Mueller reports, we found out. Then there were these spy comments where he got attacked. Then he got attacked for having a press conference before the release of the report. Then when the report came out, they attacked the comments that he made in advance of the report coming out, and on and on and on. And what I've come to realize in watching this attack on Barr is that the attack on Barr is really, in effect, part of the cover-up of the investigation that needs to happen of the investigators and their misdeeds in terms of propagating and perpetuating this flawed, phony Russiagate narrative. And so what the attacks on Attorney General Barr are about, when they call him a stooge of the Trump administration, is about delegitimizing his office and rendering illegitimate any of the work that comes out of the investigations that are currently underway, which threaten to expose this whole, as I described it in this article, sordid affair, and not only expose the members of the so-called deep state at the highest levels that were involved with perpetuating this attempt to take down a first candidate and then President Donald Trump, but also the media's complicity in propagating this. And of course, the media itself will never apologize for its role and will fight tooth and nail to stop its role from being exposed.
Well, in the column, you zeroed in on an exchange between Democrat Senator Jeanne Shaheen of New Hampshire and the Attorney General. One line from Barr stands out. He said, quote, "For the same reason we're worried about foreign influence in elections, we want to make sure that during elections, I think spying on a political campaign is a big deal. It's a big deal." Would you agree with what the Attorney General said in that statement?
Well, of course, I do agree with the Attorney General. And when we talk about election integrity and foreign interference and the like, the worst kind of interference that you could have is interference internally. You know, we have adversaries around the world who have tried to impact, undermine, sow chaos and discord in U.S. elections from time immemorial. What is something that is borderline unprecedented, and there have been some other cases, for example, you can go back and look at the spying of the Johnson presidency on Barry Goldwater back in the 1964 race. But what is almost unprecedented is the idea that we would have an opposition party spying on a candidate who's opposing sort of the favored candidate of that party, i.e. Hillary Clinton. And the underpinnings of this whole spying effort in the first place are completely dubious, and that was really exposed in the Mueller report itself, which refused, notably, to really go into how that investigation began, the associated leaks with it, the crimes, it appears, that were done in connection with what looks like in many ways sort of a setup, and all of the just weak evidence that was used that, to then concoct this case to spy on individuals in that campaign under assumption that some of them, like Carter Page, for example, was a treasonous Russian agent. And, of course, the broader subtext that the Trump campaign itself was somehow being compromised. And, oh, by the way, you know, in a typical counterintelligence investigation like that, you would let the campaign know that members of a foreign adversary were trying to make contact with members of your campaign, infiltrate it, and influence it. There were so many elements of this so far afoul of what our standards are in terms of both investigations and justice, and it leads you to believe that it all comes down to really a deep-seated animus against the president who threatened to upend the tables and upend the status quo, and this massive reaction to stop that under the guise of protecting the institutions by actually shredding the very principles on which these institutions of justice, law enforcement, national security, and the intelligence apparatus are based.
Now, I've got just about a minute left, Ben, but my wife and I were out in California a couple of weeks ago, and we visited the Nixon Library, the Nixon Presidential Library. And one long room is devoted entirely to the Watergate affair. And as I was reading through the information there, they don't cover it up at all. They cover it quite well, in fact. But as I was out there, my thought was, this almost looks like Watergate in reverse when it comes to the Obama campaign. In 30 seconds, tell me whether or not you think that makes any sense, based on what you know.
I think it's an apt comparison. And look, I think the reason that we need a full accounting, a full investigation of the investigators to prevent this from ever happening again, it goes to what separates America from third world countries, and this police state sort of tactics has to stop.
Thank you, Ben, very much. Well, you're listening to Washington Watch. Eben Fowler sitting in for Tony Perkins. Coming up next, during Easter Sunday services, terrorist bombings killed 207 Sri Lankans and injured 450 in churches and hotels. Jeff King, president of International Christian Concern, joins me to talk about this tragedy. Stay with us right here on Washington Watch.
Grandpa Jerry, what are you doing?
What? What does it look like I'm doing? I'm sitting on this bench enjoying my tea and reading the news.
You always tell me that I need to stand firm for faith, family, and freedom. Why aren't you standing?
Well, now with this new Stand Firm app, I can sit and stand at the same time. And if you got the Stand Firm app, you could learn something besides that garbage of peddling in public schools. You could listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, where Tony and leaders on the Hill and other culture influencers weigh in on current events. You can read FRC's latest publications and articles responding to what's going on in the news, like this.
Oh.
You can play trivia and earn points for free prizes. You can even access all of FRC's publications directly to sharpen your mind and give you the ability to discern the thoughts and intentions of the heart.
I can be a mind reader?
Kid, that's from the Bible, the richest piece of literature on God's green earth.
Can I see this stand-up? Wow, this would keep me informed. Visit frc.org/app to download FRC's Stand Firm app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
You're listening to Washington Watch. Evan Fowler in for Tony Perkins this Monday afternoon. Glad to have you along. At 8:45 a.m. local time, Easter Sunday, eight separate explosions ripped through three Sri Lankan churches and hotels. At least 207 people were tragically killed. Another 450 were wounded. The blasts, mostly around Colombo, have killed at least 35 foreigners, including Britons and Americans. Seven suspects have been arrested after Sri Lanka's worst violence since the end of its civil war in 2009. One suspect is Islamic extremist Mulvi Zahran Hashim. He's an imam and a prolific lecturer for National Tawhid Jamaat. Joining me to talk about this horrific tragedy is Jeff King, president of International Christian Concern. Jeff, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Evan.
Well, Jeff, give us whatever latest update you might have on what's going on over there and what we know at this point.
Right. Well, I think you've done the summary. I mean, you know, yesterday as Easter services commenced, three hotels, three churches were bombed. It's massive, 290 killed, 500 injured. That'll probably keep growing, unfortunately. You know, no one has claimed responsibility, which is a little odd, but, you know, on the surface, look, this has the earmarks of radical Islam, as well as, you know, they had intercepted something where the police had warned the intelligence agencies that an attack was coming, and they had actually specifically named a small, unnamed group, I mean, a barely heard-of group. So the interesting thing is an attack, Evan, of this size, as you know, it takes months of planning. It's a big operation. This points to international backing. So it's going to unfold in the days ahead. You know, if I'm a betting man, I'm going to say, look, this is radical Islam. They, you know, they have the intelligence intercept, but we'll see what happens.
Well, I did a little bit of reading this afternoon about Sri Lanka, and apparently there's been a lot of tension among Buddhists, Muslims, and Christians. And interestingly, two out of the three have attacked the others. And I'll let you guess which group. I'm going to just tell you. Okay, the Christians have not done any of this stuff. So, you know, as you say, this has the earmarks of a Muslim attack, terrorist attack. I mean, is it possible that the Buddhists were involved, or what would tell you that that's not the case?
Well, I wouldn't think the Buddhists were involved, honestly. I mean, the only thing you could say possibly, and this is stretching into conspiracy theory, would be a false flag attack. But again, you know, look, there was the smoking gun of the warning to the intelligence agencies, the immediate arrest, in the arrest afterwards, and the raids on houses, rather, they found explosives, they found a bunch of detonators. You know, so I'm probably being overly safe and cautious. So, you know, we're not in a court of law here. We're in a court of the obvious right now, and a court of the press. So it looks like radical Islam. And the interesting thing is, you know, ISIS and Al Qaeda had been recruiting. There's kind of a gap between Bangladesh and Afghanistan. They were trying to close that gap, and ISIS had done pretty well recruiting in the Maldives nearby. You know, a couple months ago, I think it was the Prime Minister, the President said that at least 32 high-ranking elite families, their sons had been recruited. So I suspect once we find out what's happened, that there was an operation planned, it's a soft target. And Evan, here's another interesting point. It follows on the heels of the Christchurch bombing, you know, where the mosque was attacked in New Zealand. Is it connected? Is it a response? I don't know, but it's a soft target area. So, you know, we'll be watching and see what happens.
Okay, so we've talked about the churches and the obvious Christian persecution. I'm going to ask you a little bit more about that and the history of that in Sri Lanka. But so some hotels were also attacked. So how does that fit into the picture? Is it just an attack against Westerners, if you will?
It could be. There's that. But it wouldn't just be Westerners because I'm trying to think. There were Catholic churches, evangelical churches, but a lot of locals. It was mostly locals that were killed, so as opposed to foreigners. So at the same time, some of it is curious, but this is not that unusual, and especially when you're trying to cause mass panic and a mass attack to spread it out. It's curious. Let me say that. I'll agree with you.
Well, these troglodytes who are responsible for this, they don't really care. The innocent life means absolutely nothing to them, and they have this very warped view of whatever rewards they think they're going to get. I think they're going to be surprised. The ones that blow themselves up will wake up in a place that they don't expect.
Yeah.
I guarantee you that. Well, I mentioned this Imam Mulvi the Imam's name, and I'm sure that I butchered his name, but Mulvi Hashim. What do you know about him?
You know, honestly, I'm keeping up on it, and he just came into focus, so I don't have a big background on him. You know, it hasn't really been, Sri Lanka hasn't really been a radical hotbed. But look, the Christians, the ruling Buddhist, the ruling, cultural majority is Buddhist. And they're, you know, they're hard-headed and they're offensive towards Christians and Muslims. And so, you know, if Muslims have gotten offended, it's not a surprise.
All right. Well, and then just very quickly, in about the last 30 seconds or so, can you tell us a little bit about the history of Christian persecution in Sri Lanka? I don't have much time here, but I'd like to get that in.
Well, I would say go to the website. It's very clear. There's been a constant pattern, so it's been ongoing.
And give us that website, if you will.
Persecution.org.
Persecution.org. Well, thanks very much for your time today, Jeff King, president of International Christian Concern. Coming up next, you're going to be treated to something that I think you'll find very interesting. When I talk to a millennial who slams her generation for embracing socialist policies, which are kind of all over the place right now, while enjoying the fruit of capitalism. We'll be talking to that millennial here right after the break.
Picture it. Majestic beauty all around you. Wildlife, deep blue waters, glacial mountains, lush forests. Can you imagine the majesty of creation at every turn? Discover Alaska with FRC. You'll enjoy every moment of this unforgettable experience. Juno, accessible only by sea and air. Ketchikan and its impressive collection of Native American totem poles. Glacier Bay, a breathtaking wonder. All this, plus a behind-the-scenes look at what Family Research Council is doing in our nation's capital. You'll hear directly from FRC President Tony Perkins, General Jerry Boykin, and Michelle Bachmann. This is no ordinary vacation. You'll be vacationing with the FRC family and a lot of new friends. Be rejuvenated as we deepen our relationships with God and each other. Don't just get away. Get away with purpose on Family Research Council's Alaska Cruise, July 7th through 14th. Call 844-872-5155 to register today or visit us online at frc.org/Alaska.
When you look at what is going on in our country and culture today, do you often ask, what can I do? Well, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on October 11th through 13th in Washington, D.C., and join thousands of Americans just like you who want to change the culture in a way that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Mike Pompeo, Kirk Cameron, Dana Loesch, and Ben Carson. In addition, there will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview, and informational sessions focused on the topics of life, religious liberty, the LGBT movement, national security, the realities of socialism, and more. On October 11th through 13th, stand with thousands of Values voters to restore our great nation. Registration is now open. Don't miss the early bird price of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to the last segment of Washington Watch. Eben Fowler with Bot Radio Network in for Tony Perkins today. Well, I was on my way back from lunch last Thursday, I think it was, and I was listening to a little bit of the Rush Limbaugh show. Yes, I do listen to that program when I'm not listening to Bot Radio Network or Washington Watch. Anyway, he highlighted an essay by a millennial named Alyssa Algren, who was expressing her objection that her fellow millennials embraced socialism while at the very same time enjoying the fruit of capitalism. I read her piece at the Alpha News website, where she's a contributor and columnist, and was impressed with her clarity of conservative vision. I'm holding that article. It's called Thoughts from a Hipster Coffee Shop. I'm holding it in my coffee-stained fingers right now. And you're going to really love this segment, I think. And if we have time, I want you to get in on the phone and have a little conversation with Alyssa and I. The phone number, by the way, write it down, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Alyssa, thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us here on Washington Watch.
Oh, of course. Thank you so much for having me on, Evan.
Well, we've had a couple opportunities to talk ahead of time, and I'm just really excited to hear your thoughts about this. Let me begin by reading from reading the first paragraph of your piece here. That'll kind of help set the stage. Here you say, I'm sitting in a small coffee shop near Nicole's trying to think of what to write about. I scroll through my news feed on my phone looking at the latest headlines of Democratic candidates calling for policies to fix the so-called injustices of capitalism. I put my phone down and continue to look around. I see people talking freely, working on their MacBooks, ordering food they get in an instant, seeing cars go by outside. And it dawned on me, we live in the most privileged time in the most prosperous nation, and we've become completely blind to it. Vehicles, food, technology, freedom to associate with whom we choose. These things are so ingrained in our American way of life, we don't give them a second thought. We are so well off here in the United States that our poverty line begins 31 times above the global average. 31 times. Virtually no one in the United States is considered poor by global standards. Yet, in a time where we can order a product off Amazon with one click and have it at our doorstep the next day, we're unappreciative, unsatisfied, and ungrateful. And then it goes on to say in the second paragraph, Democratic Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez recently said to Newsweek, talking about the millennial generation, quote, an entire generation which is now becoming one of the largest electorates in America came of age and never saw American prosperity, unquote. And then you go on to say, never saw American prosperity. Let that one sink in. When I first read that statement, I thought to myself, that was quite literally the most entitled and factually illiterate thing I've ever heard in my 26 years on this earth. Well, there's a lot that comes out of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's mouth that's illiterate and factually unfound. Anyhow, tell us what led you to write this piece, and why did you write it?
Well, simply put, I live in one of the most liberal cities in America, and I see on a daily basis the complete ignorance of history, ignorance to how economics works, and the popularity of figures like AOC and Bernie Sanders are in the city. And I've always had a really hard time keeping my opinions to myself. So I wanted to shed some light. I wanted to shed some light on the viewpoint that doesn't get pointed out in the university system, that doesn't get pointed out in the news. Bernie Sanders is the front runner. He got quite literally kicked out of a commune in the 70s for being useless. He became a millionaire off of the taxpayer dollar for bashing the free market. And him and AOC are products of capitalism, and they're being propped up by bashing capitalism, and my generation is eating it up. And I'm quite shocked, and it just really pushed me to speak out.
Now, you emphasize that your fellow millennials are unappreciative, unsatisfied, ungrateful. First of all, is that just based on your observation, or is there some data that shows that? And what do you think about that?
Well, there is data that shows that. I believe it was in 2018, where the Washington Post reported a study. It was 62% of millennials think or look favorably on socialism, and we're supposed to be the most educated generation. Also, we have more people going to college than any other age group in America, but yet we view a system that killed 100 million people in the 20th century as favorable. So that in and of itself is just kind of really telling to how much we don't know about history. Because if you ask a millennial, okay, do you like socialism? Do you support socialist policies? A majority will say yes. But if you go back and ask that same millennial, well, okay, do you support complete government centralization of power where they control the means of production, the output of production, and completely eliminate the profit motive? Then you get down to 32% of people look at socialism favorably. So when you describe what socialism is in its actual context, then people don't support it. My age group doesn't think that's right. But what the AOCs and the Bernie Sanders are espousing is they're just putting, I want, you know, equality, I want free college, I want free healthcare. And then millennials just look at that from an emotional standpoint and eat that up. They're just like, yeah, free stuff, that's awesome. I have a bunch of college debt. And so that's where we have this disconnect between emotion and what's fact.
Yeah, boy, that's, you know, you sound like you're about three times older than you really are. And that's a compliment, by the way, in terms of the wisdom in this article. And by the way, folks, write this title down, Thoughts from a Hipster Coffee Shop. Thoughts from a Hipster Coffee Shop. If you search for that, you can pull this article up, and you need to share it with all of your friends. You need to share it with your millennial kids and grandkids. If you're a millennial, you know, share it with your friends, because in two pages, two fairly short pages, it really nails it down. Alyssa, did you happen to hear any of the Fox News town hall with Bernie?
Yes. So again, I did, like, I looked up his clips because it was really, really hard to get through the entire town hall of Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
And evading questions and not actually answering how he's going to pay for Medicare for all, or how he's going to bring down prescription drug prices. He simply says, oh, yeah, I'm going to bring it down to how Canada has it and how Norway has it. And they just said, you know, well, how are you going to do that? Well, I'm just going to do it. So,
yeah.
So much you can sit through.
Yeah, and Alex Cortez does the same thing. But, I would encourage our listeners to go to YouTube and look up that town hall. It was a Fox News town hall from last week with Bernie Sanders. And it's instructive because if you watch it carefully and you watch his techniques carefully, I mean, he's a politician, by golly.
Oh, yeah.
But when they ask him direct questions, he dodges them. He's a master question dodger when they start to get at something. And I have to give Brett Baer and Martha McCallum a little bit of credit because they did try. One of the questions, lines of questioning was asking him about he is a millionaire because of the book that he sold, as you said, that trashes capitalism. And that's why he made $1 million. That's mm-hmm. oxymoronic, if anything is. And they ask him about the Trump tax cuts and they say, you know, you voted against them, and why don't you give the money back that you should have paid had the tax cuts not gone through? You should have seen him dance on that one. It was hilarious.
I saw that, yeah.
And frustrating.
Yeah.
And he just handles every question, any question that's substantive enough. And unfortunately, most of these people never get in front of people who know the facts and know how to ask tough questions and will stick with them and grill them. Even the Fox News people, you know, they're halfway good, but they don't quite get to it. Once again, I would encourage our listeners to, first of all, to take some kind of medication ahead of time, because it's very difficult to get through if you don't throw stuff at the television set. Just, you know, be calm. Anyway, some of this is the millennials are being influenced by their educations, are they not? Tell us a little bit about your thoughts there.
Yeah, I went to a public university in Wisconsin, and I was pre-law for 3 years. So I had a political science minor, and I was an economics major. So I was in a lot of history and political science classes, and I was always probably one of three conservatives in the class. I did not have the popular opinion, and with my personality, I loved it. But, you know, a lot of people don't. But it was so evident. You know, you know, your kids go off to college, and more times than not, conservative kids can, you know, they have that aha moment, like they just discovered the world and they become liberals. And I just, you know, that kind of had the opposite effect on me, but it is scary. The left truly does run the university system. I bring up the that Rosen Roop study found that 53% of Americans under 30 have a favorable view of socialism because of what they and this is due to what they learn in college. Only 108 Democratic professors to zero Republican professors are in the communications departments in colleges. So what that study published on the National Association of Scholars found that the ratio of faculty members of Democrats to Republicans, I think, averages about 10 to 1. And then if you take out hardcore military schools, it's 12 to 1. So for every one Republican professor, you have 12 Democrats. And this is true for, you know, the religious, the humanities, the English, the sociology, the philosophy, you know, all these humanities, which, you know, these students are going into the humanities. This is why you have college debt and you're working at coffee shops. But I digress.
That's right.
That's a whole other topic.
Yeah,
but,
although, you know, you can be a bartender and then be a congresswoman. So, you know, it's a pretty big jump there. But I think there's a little bit more behind that story that made that happen. Well, let me jump back to your article here for just a second. You document how well capitalism has served America, economically speaking. How great of an experiment has our country been?
Oh, it's our prosperity has met levels that were unimaginable in previous history. Because of free market capitalism, that's the system that brought the most people out of abject poverty. It's brought the most wealth and prosperity to the most amount of people, and yet we don't care. You know, free market capitalism, the best thing about that is it's completely based on consenting transactions. No one's forcing you to buy anything. And you can also not provide a service or good that nobody wants to buy. It won't work. So capitalism is all about individual choices. But I think what really gets my generation is that if they don't like their life, they don't want to hear it's their fault. They don't want to hear it's, well, I could have made better decisions. They want to hear that, oh, well, the system is flawed. And I think that's where my generation really has trouble with accountability and, you know, just basically self-responsibility.
That's right. Well, if you want to jump in on the conversation here in the last few minutes of the broadcast, the number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Well, Alyssa, you know, where are you going to take it from here? What are your thoughts? What are your plans? And what do you hope to do with this information?
Honestly, I'm kind of just going with the ride right now. My passion is conservative Christian ideals and to help further that. My passion is to help Americans remember where our country came from, Judeo-Christian values, how this was built. Get back to traditional American values. I'm not, you know, shoving my ideals down anyone's throat. I'm not even saying you have to be, you know, you don't have to be a Christian. You don't have to be a conservative. But we have to get back to remembering where we came from and the basics of the free market capitalism, the prosperity it brought. And if God willing wants me, you know, we'll see where he takes me. And it's God's plan, and he's working through me, and I'm up for whatever he has in store for me.
Let's take a call. We got Peter on the line from Missouri. Peter, thank you for coming on Washington Watch. What's your comment or question? And I don't hear Peter. Are you there? Okay. All right. Well, Peter just dropped off the line. So we've got a couple more minutes here. And again, I want to encourage our listeners to search for Thoughts from a Hipster Coffee Shop. Again, this is just a really nice, concise piece. Do you have something else in the offing? Are you working on your next piece?
I have a lot of pieces. If you go, I believe I have six up right now. I am continually, I have two in the works right now, but I'm always writing. I've had my call up every week, and then whatever events I go to. I was just at Dinesh D'Souza's speech last week. I'm currently finishing up a piece about that. But yeah, I want to keep writing. I love writing. Just see if anyone continues to read it. So I will continue to do so.
Fantastic. And is most of your writing, does it show up on Alpha News, or do you have some other opportunities as well?
No, right now it's just on alphanewsminnesota.com. So just, we have a lot of great reporting on that website. It's all from a standpoint you don't hear and you don't see in the mainstream media. So anybody that wants to check it out, we have some great reporting and commentary there. And
very
that's where
good.
All my writing is.
Very good. Well, Thoughts from a Hipster Coffee Shop is the name of the piece. Alyssa, thanks again so much for taking time out of your day to talk with our listeners. We appreciate it. Well, that's it for today. That's it for this Monday. This is Evan Fowler. It's been great being along here for the ride. Thanks for listening to Washington Watch, and be back tomorrow at the same time.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.